Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Hollis Chapman Show. I am Hollis. We have a special guest here today. She's calling back in because we had a little mix-up a couple weeks back. So we really appreciate her calling back in to join us today. She's going to talk about her new book. Okay, her new book is a dystopian thriller. And she explained what that means when she comes on live. But our guest is a celebrated author, celebrated storyteller. And she is from Oklahoma with her family. She's calling from Oklahoma, small town, outstanding. Let's welcome to the show our special guest, Susie Smith.
Hi.
Hello, Susie.
Hello. Hi. Good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for calling back in. We appreciate that. Very excited about your new book and your background and what you do. I know you do some stuff for the Kenza tribe out there in Oklahoma. So very excited to talk about that. So before we continue, please tell us a little more about yourself and your newest book.
Okay. All right. My name is Susie Smith. I live in Oklahoma in a small town. I have four grown children. I have been married for 32 years. Let me see, what else? I love to write and I love my job. I come for the Kenza tribe. My new book, Ascendant, follows my debut novel, which was Asylum, which won the 2020 WriterCon award in the novel category, and was also a semifinalist in the KBR awards in the sci-fi fantasy category. So that one did okay. And so the new book just picks right up where Asylum left off. My main protagonist, Lacey Monroe, is on the run from her evil uncle who wants to use her in his political game to regain control of the United States. And that is where my new novel, Ascendant, starts.
Outstanding. Yeah, before we continue, I got to sit and tell the world, tell the listeners, that four grown children, married 30-something years. I don't know what you're drinking, what you're doing, but you would never know about what your biopic and stuff like that. So you look wonderful. You look very young.
Thank you.
That's outstanding. You keep on doing what you're doing. Because as I get older, I'm sitting there going, wow, four children. Holy smokes. Good for you. You're doing wonderful. Question, can you start off by explaining how your expertise in language and communication interacts with your work as a celebrity dystopian author? And then before you do that, explain what dystopian means.
When I sat down to write Asylum, I did not have the genre dystopian in mind. Dystopian simply means it's a different world. It's not the world as it is now. It's either a dystopian world that has fallen, it's a fallen world. Utopia, on the other hand, would be a glorified world where everything is, you know, perfect and magical and stuff like that. So my setting, my backdrop is the United States has suffered what I call the big crash. And so the economic, there was just an economic meltdown. And so think of Walking Dead backdrop where, you know, everything is in chaos. And so the government rounds up the citizens to control them and putting them in work camps. So my main protagonist, Lacey, is on her family farm and she fights to stay there. So that's, I guess, a long way of explaining what dystopian means.
Outstanding. Very good. I had to look it up. I wasn't sure myself, but Now I understand. You know, you must be a great admirer or a great watcher of The Walking Dead. I mean, The Walking Dead has so many spinoffs from it, because if you go to the streaming channels, it's every other show is about, you know, The Walking Dead, about the zombie movie, this, and this. Why do you think we have such a interest in the zombie genre?
In the zombie, my books don't have zombies, but it's the same type background. I think the reason why we're so fascinated by zombies is because they're in the back of everybody's mind. They're going, could that really happen?
Yeah.
You know, it's just a fascination, you know, and there's several different ways, you know, I could spin where we could, you know, realistically have zombies.
Yeah.
So I think that's fascinating, because to watch people and how they, how the writers of The Walking Dead have their characters react and grow even as a character in The Walking Dead. Who's excited for the Daryl Dixon spinoff? I know my kids are.
That's wonderful. You know, can you explore the ideas of survival, freedom, and the ugliest side of human nature? Just kind of go deep dive into that more, you know, with your writing and what your thoughts and how it may turn out as things got kind of ugly for the human nature.
Well, everybody, I feel like, has a kind of a dark side because of our general makeup as human beings. It's what you do, how you process and react to a situation that tells you kind of who you really are. And some people just don't have that internal moral code or check. You know what I'm talking about, that feeling that you get when you're kind of dance on the slippery side of what's right and wrong. You know, most people have that check that, like, okay, you know, at least their conscience kicks in a little bit. Some of my characters just don't have that, and they take advantage of the situation. So,
you know, it's as you one of the questions from the bio, it says, would our world be able to live off the land? You know, this high-tech society we live in now, my thought, I don't think so. Now, I don't, you know, I know my kid, who's 25. Heck, he's going to live off the land and stuff like that. Talk more about that. How, if things went ugly, living off the land, can we revert back to that? Can we sit there and survive? Or maybe because of, you know, excuse me, we see things happen, you know, with the tornadoes and hurricanes and stuff like that. And as a human race, we do pull together. So maybe we could pull together as things turn that way. Is that what your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm right there with you. I have my oldest is 30 and my youngest is 22. And so I have two millennials and two Gen Zs. And I was looking at them and just thinking, you guys were not raised the way I was raised. I'm a Gen Xer. I lived outside when I was a kid. I don't know about anybody else, but, you know, we lived outside. My parents had a huge garden. They made me help, you know. So I have a good idea. My grandpa, that 40 acres that I talk about in my books, is actually a real place. It is a real physical location with those different buildings that I describe. And my grandpa raised cattle, and we butchered, and he had meat locker and different things that you do, freezers and stuff like that. And so I know the butchering process from the time the bullet leaves the gun until it's packaged and put in the freezer. So I know what all that entails, but I know my kids don't, because they weren't raised that way. I don't think most of generation, the Z generation, or even the millennial generation, know what I'm talking about.
Right.
But I do feel like that communities would pull together, and because it would take, like, somebody would have something and somebody would have something else. It's like that old story of the stone soup. I feel like that the community would come together that way.
Yeah, I mean, I believe it too. I mean, that's one thing about our country. When I look back and see disasters, you know, the disaster in Maui with the fires and, you know, big hurricanes like that. It's just, it amazes me how people just pull together. Neighbors helping neighbors, country help, you know, we just help each other when there's a horrific, horrific destruction. So maybe it has to come to that, to make people sit there and stand up and pull together. Doesn't matter, black, white, whatever, whatever. We're just going to help you out. And that's good to see.
Right.
Yeah, it's just crazy how it is, but that's what our country's all about. That's great. How do you see language being used as a tool for social control within a dystopian narratives? How do you see that, you know, the social language and how that goes out, how that really works into it when you're writing and you're speaking, you know?
As far as the social goes, I really don't know. Can you expound a little bit on your question?
Yeah,
so I'll know kind of where you're.
Sorry about that. Can you share some examples of this from your own work? So you do your work, maybe mm-hmm. in the tribes and stuff like that. How do you feel from the social aspect of it? Of bringing people closer, bringing people up. I'm probably getting more confused with it as I ask more. So sorry about that. Is there anything in the social world that you could sit there and add with the dystopian world? Yeah, to that?
Well, I feel like, I don't know if this answers your question or not, but I do feel like, in my world, the government played a big part of how the citizens reacted. The president declared martial law. Mm. And so he basically took over as a totalitarianism type government was in place. And the citizens really had no say over what was going on. And as a society, we don't know what that really feels like, to have your rights as a human stripped away from you, to have the, you know, ability to be able to do your own thing, or look, I'm going to go take a vacation to, you know, mm-hmm. Hawaii or, you know, wherever. No, you can't do that right now. You know, that kind of thing. We as a society just don't know what that looks like, don't know how that really feels, because as bad as our country has, you know, whatever you're, I don't, you know, I'm not here to talk politics or whatever, but I think we can all agree that we are living in a time of unrest, I guess is a nice way to put it. I think we can all agree. And, you know, if some disaster, some horrific thing was to happen, could we as a society change and morph into a more of a totalitarianism type government? I don't think so myself, but that's a big question.
Right. Very good. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, here in Arizona, we have multiple land owned by Native Americans. You work for the Kanza tribe in Oklahoma. Talk about that more. Kind of deep dive into that. How did you get started with that, and how's it going? I mean, do you see a positive light with that? Are they treated well? Is the government doing good things with that? Talk more about that, because out here in Arizona, you can tell that it's owned by Native Americans because there's casinos on the land. You know,
right,
can be
exactly.
Not us. So I'll talk more about your Kanza tribe, how you get involved, why is it so important to you, and that's your and now that's your career.
Well, the reason why I am working for the Kanza tribe first and foremost is because they helped with my education. They helped me get my bachelor's in English. So I felt like I needed to come back and give back to the tribe. I mean, they educated me, so, and they need more. Tribes need more educated people to come in and work for them, because that's just going to push them forward where they need to go. Oklahoma, I don't know if anybody reads up on Oklahoma politics or government or whatever, but right now Governor Stitt is not a real favored person as far as the tribes go. I think I can safely say that in Oklahoma because of land issues and tax issues and things like that. But it's a real pleasure working for the Khanza tribe, getting back and knowing some of my history and you know, my family tree and where I come from and who my people are. That's real important to tribes. Is they won't ask you your name. They'll ask you who are your people.
Wow.
And, yeah, and so it's really, it's been a real I learn something new every single day that I come to work, and I love that because I would be a student, a professional student, if I could manage and if I could afford it. I would spend most of my time learning. But I love learning the language. I love being able to be a part of its keeping it alive.
Outstanding. Before we continue, please tell us where do we go after this show to learn more about you and what you do and where we can get your wonderful books.
I have a website. It's SusySmith.com. I spell my name S-U-S-Y Smith.com. And then I am on Facebook, Susie Smith Writer for Life, I believe. I'm also on Instagram and TikTok and various different places that you can probably find me. If you go on Facebook, there's links and stuff for that as well. And you can buy my books on Amazon or go to my website and click the link and you can go from there.
Yeah. And make sure, guys, that you really do write her name correctly, because I had to catch myself twice because I wrote S-U-Z. Say, ooh, that's not right. So, yeah, that's very important.
Yes, exactly. I don't know what my mother was thinking.
That's good. That's good. Okay, can you talk about the challenges, opportunities? You said a little bit about that, the challenges, opportunities, but you overcome a couple of challenges and stuff working with the tribes. It must be a great feeling to know that you're getting better. I mean, I know you don't want to fight the government, but that's a big part of what you're doing is trying to get things, you know, better for the tribe, language, and culture, right?
Yes, exactly. We are constantly striving to move forward, and so we're always looking at grants. I've helped write a couple of grants that we've gotten. The Endangered Language Fund, we've got a grant going through them, and we just got one from the interlocal co-op, and that we got, which is going to really, really help us because we're a small tribe. We have 3,500 people on our roll, I believe, and we have no first generation speakers left. So it's just our work is so important to keep it, the language alive, because tribes' identity comes from the language.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. Yeah, like I said, it's very exciting. I get to really look into that more. But here in Arizona, we got tribe. You know, we got multiples. And I think by the 10 casinos we have out here, I think each one is owned by different tribes. So that's kind of interesting right there. Do you guys do the casino thing too out there in Oklahoma?
Yes, we do. We have we have one off the I-35 corridor. It's 10 miles from the Kansas border. It's called Rock and Brews. And that is our casino up there. And right now it's a casino and a restaurant, but I think they have plans to add a hotel on as well. So yeah, we do the casino thing. All the tribes around here do. I mean, where I live in right off the I-35 corridor in Blackwell, Oklahoma. It's north central Oklahoma up there in Kay County. And in Kay County, I think I can count 1, 2, 3, 4. Like there's 6 casinos that you could travel and go to within a 20 to 30 mile radius. It's ridiculous. There's so many casinos.
What keeps Susie in a small town like that? I mean, probably because of what you're doing with the Native tribe, but is there more? I mean, is there days where you and your husband sit there and go, well, you know, maybe we can go to Oklahoma City. Maybe we can go to a bigger city. Maybe we can do this and this. what you talk to us about that, staying in a small, because I'm from a small town myself. Sometimes I think I should go back to a small town, but sometimes I think, you know, I need to get things done. I got to leave town to go get this and go get that. What keeps you in a small town in Oklahoma?
Well, there are challenges in a small town. Like you said, certain things I can't get in Blackwell. We do have a Walmart. You know, hey, that's saying something, huh? No, but I could not live in a big city. My husband and I took our youngest daughter to a concert in Tulsa a couple of weeks ago. We went to see Motley Crue. Anyway, that's irrelevant. But we were in the middle of traffic, and it just, you know, when you come from a place where, you know, there's zero traffic to a whole bunch of traffic, my husband goes, ugh. You know, and he said, this is why we don't live in the city. It's because of the traffic. I mean, I don't know how people do it every day, getting up and fighting the traffic to go to work and stuff. I love my drive to work. It takes me 30 minutes to get to work, but that's okay because it's just, I travel right down Highway 11 and it's just wheat fields or cornfields or bean fields or whatever the farmers decide they're going to plant that season, and hay fields, and then I get to work, and we're stuck out here in a field, and so it's nice. I would not. I mean, it's a good trade off for me. I gladly trade off the convenience of living in a city for looking out my window and seeing nothing but cows or, you know, the sky and land. It's beautiful. It's just great.
Outstanding. You know, I ask a lot of my authors who come on the show about, especially they have great books and great series in their books, about putting stuff on TV. I think your book would be a great addition to maybe a Hulu or Netflix. Have you thought about that, going that route too? Because I think that story should be told. And I think people really enjoy your writing and your first book, your second book, and maybe more in the future. What do you think about that, putting it on TV as a series or as a movie?
I would love it. I would absolutely love it. I don't know how to do that. These are my first two books. I'm writing the third one currently. I am writing the sequel to Ascendant. And I would absolutely love to see it on television or a movie. I think a TV series like Netflix or Hulu, like you said, would just be great. I would love it. I would do it in an instant.
Okay. I'm going to keep that in mind because we're trying to put together a nice promotion company to pick up a lot, because we're getting a lot of authors, a lot of great stuff, and like a lot of them, like yourself, not sure how to go to the next level by putting it on TV.
Right.
But it's great TV, so I'm working on that in the background. Okay, so tell us about your Ascendant, the title, the beautiful cover. How did that come about? Because I love the cover and the title. Go ahead, talk about that.
I'm really glad to hear that you love the cover. My publisher, and he's also my mentor, I always call him my mentor, Bill Bernhardt. He owns Babylon Books, and that's who published my two books. He hired someone to do that cover art, and it was just amazing. He has amazing vision when it comes to cover art and even titles, because I wanted to call my sequel, I wanted to call it Leverage, and he goes, no. No, can't have that. So I kind of racked my brain until I found another A word, Ascendant, that fit. And I give all the props and the credits and the claps to my publisher, Bill Bernhardt, because he did such an outstanding job doing that. I got to see the cover art, you know, and the different ones, and he said, what do you think about this versus this, you know? So it was kind of collaborative, but he just did an outstanding job. And as far as the name goes, Ascendant, like I said, the second book is all about leverage. And if I had that Johnny Depp quote memorized, I could just name it off. But the crux of it is why fight when you can negotiate, all you need is the proper leverage. And that, you know, her uncle has leverage over her, which is forcing her to do certain things in the book. So her journey is looking for leverage to tip those scales, to, you know, to knock him off balance and regain, you know, become the ascendant and regain that power that he's taken from her. So that's how that name came about.
Sweet. This is a painted picture of the book cover. Helicopter, city in the background, the female running towards the barbed wire. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. What's she running from?
Well, the helicopter, first of all, I love that because there is a helicopter in the second book. There's one in the first book, but I really go more in depth where I have my characters flying around because I needed to get them from one place to another quickly, and I needed to figure out how to tell that. And so I used a helicopter, and so I just love that vision in the background. And then that background is actually the Mexico City skyline. If anybody, you know, cares to look, it is kind of the Mexico City backdrop, because that's where she is, and she's running. That is a metaphor, her running from, she's been captured in Mexico City by a human trafficker. And so most of the book is her trying to escape that and get back to Jason and get this leverage where they can get out from under her uncle's thumb. So that's the cover in a nutshell, I think.
Well, that's the writing. That's the picture, where the picture says 1,000 words, right? What you just explained,
yes,
to
it.
Yes, it does. That's wonderful. Well done. Well done. Before we get to the final comment, please tell us again, where do we go after the show to learn more about you, your family in Oklahoma, children, and your work? Where do we go?
S-U-S-Y Smith, SusieSmith.com, or Facebook. You can catch me, Susie Smith, Writer for Life. That's a 4, the number 4. And you can catch me, and I'd be more than happy to visit with anybody who wants to talk about my book or has questions. I'd love to answer them.
In closing, Susie, can you share advice or lessons you have learned throughout your career regarding power of language? Because we know the power of language. I mean, it can be very hurtful. It can be very emotional. Now, when I took before the show, I always listen to, you know, music and stuff like that. It's very uplifting, very powerful. It gets me excited. What have you done? What have you seen because of the power of language?
Well, words, the written word, to me, the written word is forever. Once you write it down on paper, it's there, and it means something. It has power. Words in and of itself, I believe, carry power. And I, when I write, I always try to convey through language, through storytelling. When a reader finishes my book, I want them to walk away with the questions, you know, questioning things, whether it be, wow, do I know how to grow a garden? Maybe I should Google that. Or I didn't know human trafficking existed in Oklahoma. Maybe I should check that out. You know, I want them to walk away asking questions. And so I really feel like through language, maybe I can get people to start a conversation.
And you know, with the prevalence of social media, the written word is so important. You know, before you hit that send button, make sure you double read what you wrote, because once it goes out, you ain't getting it back. You know, that's why can be very. I've been online for 15, 20 years, and there's not one thing that I've written that I regret writing, because I think about what I write before I hit send. You know, and that's what most. You know, that's what we have to do more of. Because, again, I just drive me crazy when these people go on there, they say something, and all of a sudden the next they go, oh, I'll apologize for right what I said. Well, you know, it's too late. It's too late. The written word is very powerful. The written word is so powerful. It can help. It can inspire. It can do so many things. Let's do it for some good. Susie, Thank you so much for joining us. You've been
Thank
awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we've learned a lot about the Kanza tribe and your books, and we're definitely going to keep you in touch about putting this on TV. Thank you so much.
I would love, love, love it. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Susie Smith, author of the fast-paced dystopian thriller, Ascendant. Make sure you follow up, guys. Like all our guests, follow up, show them some love. Let's get them books moving. Let's do some great things. And we are. We're looking to get these great authors on TV. They're looking for, you know, these connect, you know, these connected channels. You know, the YouTube, the Fiverr, all of them are looking for content, great content like this to put on TV. Let's help them out. All right? Let's slow it down a little bit with some music. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. Friday's show, I Will Not Be On. I have a guest host on this show. We're putting that together right now. Please jump in, learn, and we'll be back the week after with some special guests, okay? So have a great week. Friday's show will be a special guest, and we'll go from there. Thanks, everybody. As always, I'll see you next time.